So thank you for giving me the opportunity to present some work in progress about low mass filamentary structures, which are density filaments. Sorry to see with the shear structures we saw.
I'm too opaque.
So here is just a sample of molecular clouds, galactic molecular clouds, where you see where the tracers are 12 COs. 13 CO, what for the dust, and what you see, well, it was just a recollection of stuff.
Oh, thank you. No.
Sorry. Yes, excuse me. So it's just a recollection of filamentary clouds. So you have Lepus, Perseus, Serpens, we saw last week, and well, there are many more. And the questions were already asked last week, I think, when we were talking about the structures in molecular clouds and the role of the filaments in the formation of cores. For instance, and are these structures necessary in the evolution of a molecular cloud and in the formation of a dense core? And also there is the question of the link to the IMF, because a filament gives you naturally a scale, we'll see that later, which might also translate it into a characteristic mass. And so how this is related to the peak of the IMF, I think is an interesting question. So how are we going to tackle these questions? First, we have to make maps of isolated filaments in order to be able to tell that what we are looking at are filaments, and study the velocity field without line confusion. So we are going to see maps essentially of molecules to get the velocity field with very high precision. And in the view of studying the fragmentation of filaments, we would like to map filaments on large scale enough to be able to encompass the eventual wavelength of the fragmentation, to have several of these. And not only the velocity field, but also the density field we would like to have. So we'll combine with bolometer maps. So I will start with an object which is called the Snake Nebula, which you might know. And this is B68, the well-known B68. But seen on a larger scale, then it's very suggestive that all these things may have been related in the past. And maybe that there was one single filament which fragmented, but I don't know, and gave birth to these Bach lobules. So the idea was to check that if there is a link between these structures, okay, and are we able to say whether there is a temporal sequence? So we went to the 30-meter single-dish telescope and started to make a map. Here it's a 12 CO 2-to-1 transition at 200. Here it's 2-to-1. We made two maps, okay, with a multi-beam facility of the IRAM 30-meter, and we have a resolution of 1,500 AU. And the resolution in terms of velocity is 50 meters per second, so it's very high. So we recognize that. B68 we didn't map because it's already mapped elsewhere. And all this gas is at the same velocity. Indeed. And, that doesn't prove that
it's the same. With what accuracy? What's the velocity dispersion?
The velocity dispersion in 12 CO is of the order of 0.4 km per second. and it's quite thin, narrow, I mean. And they are all centered at the same velocity. Well, not exactly the same. I mean, you may have a discrepancy between these guys with respect to that. You may have a couple of times this 0.4 kilometer per second.
What's the difference again between?
Of the order of between that and that, you have a difference of the order of half a kilometer per second. Yeah, of the order of that. And I just put the 12 CO2 to 1 contours on top of the H alpha emission. And what you see is that, okay, the maybe you were expecting that. I mean, that the molecular gas here is sitting in the region of low H alpha. But what is important, I think, is that all this gas is bathing in a region of high temperature, which is exerting a high pressure on this gas.
Is it known what the pressure in the ionized gas is?
Not really, but I think that when papers dealing with B68 mention a temperature of 10 to the 5 K around that, yes.
And that's hard to do.
Yeah, 10 to 4 is easy.
No, I think it's very. Yeah, I saw that. Yes.
Yeah, because the cooling time is extremely short, so that seems efficient.
I mean, yes. Here, in B68 is sitting here. You see in this hole, and I think that the people are referring to these regions.
How did they estimate the temperature?
I don't know. So I just show here a channel map of all this region, because we'll see in more detail the velocity field of this filament, but there are some things that we see here only in the 12 CO because we don't have the data in 13 CO. I would like just to draw the attention on this region where you see a very sharp transition from a molecular gas to no molecular gas, okay, which stays very sharp in several velocity channels. And also there is sort of a cavity which is opening up if you look at here, going along this velocity channel, you see this cavity which is opening up. Well, it's just something I see. I mean, I have no. So, okay, I just present you the integrated intensity map of the Snake Nebula in 12 CO221. So what you see is that, okay, you have the main filament, and you have also these structures which go perpendicular to the structure. And all this gas is also seen in the 13 CO. Okay? And the average column density of the 13 CO here is of the order of 10 to the 16 particle per square centimeter. I mean, just an LTE steady.
Is there anything known about magnetic field geometry here?
Unfortunately, no. So, now we are going to... I would like to present you just the analysis of the velocity field of this filament. So, this is a channel map of the 13 CO emission. And, okay, so what you see is that it seems that there is some gas which is flowing along the filament when you go from one channel to the other. And to check this possibility, I made a simple model of a helix, okay, with gas flowing along the helix. I mean, I don't know how you can produce such a helix. But assume you have a helix and the gas is flowing along it, and at each point you emit a Gaussian of a given width, and there is no additive transfer, so I just assume that the intensity is proportional to the column density. So among the parameters of this model, there is only one which is free, which is indeed the orientation of the helix with respect to the plane of the sky.
Because I mean, in the structure of the helix, you have an angle.
You have that.
No, but that's the orientation of the helix. But
the
I just want
to. Pitch angle.
Yeah, the pitch angle.
sorry?
The pitch angle of the helix.
It's just going perpendicular to the axis. It's not like this.
Oh, it's just a sinusoidal, you're saying. There's
in
no
projection,
rest.
Yes. What I mean is that it's not doing like the axis. The pitch angle, it is called the pitch angle. It's zero. Let's say. Okay, I assume it's zero.
No.
Or 90. What is the convention?
I think the issue is like think of it like a slinky. So your helix is. Do you notice? Like, you know.
How many windings are length?
Yeah.
For the whole length, how often does it wrap around?
Ah yes, this is a parameter. This is what I call the step.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so indeed I have, of course, the velocity of the gas flowing along it, the width of the Gaussians, and then the lengths and the orientations with respect to the plane of the sky. But all these parameters are quite easily constrained by the observation, and you barely have only one which is completely free, which is the orientation of the helix with respect to the plane of the sky. So, I didn't try to make a fit. I mean, this model is so crude that it's just to have a qualitative idea of the velocity field of this filament. And this is what we obtain. So I just reproject then this helix on the same position velocity cube, just as if I were observing it with a 30 meter. Okay. So the idea is just to try to reproduce the main features of the velocity field of this structure. So starting, let's say, I don't know if you can see, but if we start in this velocity channel, what I think is interesting is that the emission starts on the top here, okay, so it's increasing as you go here, and then in the middle you have a lot of emission there, the bottom, okay, and here at the extreme right, and then when you continue, you are losing the emission is just on that side, and if you can see there is still a bit here, but mostly it's at this velocity, it's mostly here. So what you see in this simple model is that as you go along this velocity, you also see first the velocity appearing at the top of the structures. Then it seems to flow along the helix. Here you have a maximum of emission, which is also seen here in the data. And then when you go away, you are losing the emission. You have still a bit of emission here, which is also seen here. So I thought that this very simple model is, I think, gives me already some idea about the velocity field of this strange structure. I mean, I have no idea how to build such a structure. Okay, and I mean, it's related to your question about the magnetic fields. I don't know. We have no idea about
them. So another model could be a filament that is not, say, a helix, could be on a plane, but you have a periodic velocity field kind of focusing in some spot on the filament.
No, this would not work. I would like to, okay. I could explain okay. that later, but...
I
Okay, so this was for the velocity field. Then, of course, what we would like to know is whether you have convergent flows in the filament. But to do that is a step beyond. I mean, this is still in progress. So we have been mapping this filament with the APEX telescope with the Laboca bolometer at 850 microns to get an idea of the density field. And of course, the idea we wanted to check is whether there are some true overdensities along the filament in view of the fragmentation of the filament. So what we see here is that indeed you have some overdensities. I mean, I don't know after Clump scores, I just call these entities, okay? So you have some entities along the filament which are overdensities. Okay, I can't tell more yet about that. And their typical size is the usual one. I mean, in low mass star formation, it's around that 1 parsec. And density is a couple of times 10 to the 4 particle per cubic centimeter. And okay, the masses ranges from dot 3 to 2 mass, 2 solar masses. And interestingly enough, the density is on the low bound here, a couple of a few 10 to the 4. Whereas here in B68 and in these two entities here, you have a density which are of the order of 10 to the 5. So the density, I mean, these globules here are more condensed, okay, than this one, okay, by a factor of, let's say, 5.
Excuse me, does your flow model connect the whole range right up to B68?
No.
Where does your flow model end?
Here. I mean, it was just to model this helical structure. I have no data on the whole path. And okay, so just the densities. So you see that the filament seems to be fragmented, with densities of the entities here which are a factor of 5 lower than these ones. B68, just to recall, is said to be about to collapse. Well, I don't know, because there are many models of B68 oscillating or not. And these two ones also are very condensed. Okay, so then if you compute the distances between these clumps, if you compute the distances between these overdensities, okay. Well, it's very interesting to note that, well, the projected distance, okay, I just ignore that it may be a helix or I don't know what. Just the projected distance between the overdensities is of the order of 0.25 parsec. And indeed, what I find interesting is that here, of course, it's more. The distance along this structure is more, but it's a multiple of that. I mean, it's just as if there were some missing points, okay? So it's not a completely ridiculous value. It's 3 times indeed. Okay.
So this is a distance measure on the curve?
Yeah.
It's not a flexible tape measure.
Sorry?
The flexible tape measure.
Well, yeah, but I didn't made some funny things. I mean, I it's just a crude estimate like this.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, all this, of course, in view of the fragmentation of the filament. So then, what we can try to do is to compare with some models. So I try to summarize here some physical conditions of this filament, and here I compare the mass per unit length of this filament with the virial mass per unit length, and you have a ratio which is smaller than 0.1. So I think this raises the questions of the confinement of this filament.
Excuse me, do you mean the density is actually 30,000? You have 3,000.
Ah, yes, but it's just an average. I took an average along the whole structure. I mean,
so then two above that, you have a density of 3,000, temperature of 20. That gives you 6 to the 4, not 6 to the 5.
Oh, yes, sorry. Excuse me. Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The pressure is too high, or the density is too high.
No. I made a mistake here. It's 4. It's 4. And, yes, so, I mean, this is an interesting parameter. And indeed, we'll see later that it's very general with filaments, with molecular filaments. They are under-viralized.
So that ratio is for the whole structure or a clump?
No, for the whole structure. It's a mass per unit length considered.
So how do you ever calculate m-virial in that case? It seems like it involves a lot of geometry assumptions.
Well, yes, it's just based on the velocity dispersion of the 12 CO line.
But you're using, I mean, is it really...
It's not a spherical distribution.
Yeah, I mean,
you're using the
filamentary definition of
Exactly.
So it's not m virial really; it's mass per unit length.
Yeah. Yes, but it's a small m. I put.
He's not looking at a clump; he's looking at the whole thing.
But for a filament, you can define a variable ratio in terms of a mass per unit length, which is what that little m is. So it's not a mass, it's a mass per unit length.
But it seems more relevant to look at the individual clump. Are they pressure confined or gravitational confined?
Well,
whatever you not.
Sorry?
Not the bead on the string.
Yes.
Individual clump.
What I wanted to know is whether the filament as a whole is, in terms of this parameter, to compare with some existing model of fragmentation of filaments.
Okay, sure.
But
the individual clump could be self-gravitated.
Yes, that I still don't know.
Well, except for B16, we know it's self-gravitated.
Yeah, exactly.
The ones on the string.
I still don't know.
There are 10 tensors, so you will get roughly 1 instead of 1.1, right?
Yes, but here the geometry is cylindrical. I mean, for the. Yeah.
I thought B68 was the dense one. So the other ones on the snake were less dense, so they're probably not.
That's my guess. Yes.
Velocity dispersion.
That velocity dispersion you get, that defines mass per unit length variable. It's just sigma squared over G. So all you have to do is measure that delta V.
Yeah.
And you measure the delta V outside of the dense regions, right? Just in your interferometry stuff, presumably.
But sorry, here, to compute this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's in the filament.
Well, no, because I thought the CO was clumped up, so we can only really see it.
Well, but the 12 CO is not so much clumped.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That's why we did a bolometer map to know if these are truly over densities. I mean, the 12 CO cannot tell you that. And there is in the Figi and Pedritz model, there is a parameter which is called the core radius of a filament, which is defined like this. So I tried to estimate this quantity, but. I mean, the dispersion, the velocity dispersion, we have it quite well, but the density is not very well defined, but it's only a square root dependence. And the distance, and then I compare this core radius of the filament with the distance between the clumps, along the filaments. And because this appeared to be a critical parameter in the Figi and Pedritz model. And to be able to disentangle between gravitationally dominated or magnetically dominated fragmentation modes. So if we compare this core radius with the wavelength of the fragmentation mode, if it is, then we obtain this quantity, which would indicate, according to these models, that the instability which would give rise to this string is magnetically dominated. Okay.
Which I guess you might have expected just from the fact that it's so subvirial. I mean, self-gravity is not important for this object.
Yeah, but
maybe in special places.
But I mean, the external pressure may be quite high.
Oh, even if it is, but I mean that means it's not. You know, it's hard to get a gravitational instability to go when. You're only 10% of the virial.
Okay,
so
but then...
The beauty of filaments is that if you're sub-virial, it doesn't matter what the pressure is. Mm-hmm. It's stable.
What?
It's stable. The filament, that pressure could be 10 to the 7 V over K. And it's still stable as long as it's sub-virial.
Right.
And that's what's so exciting about your measurements, that you're finding more variables less than 1.
But indeed, it's quite general.
I agree with Mark. I'm not understanding, given the fact that it's so subvirial, why is gravity important at all?
Well, it's still holding. It is still partially holding together that gas, but that's not the only point.
It's only a 10% effect. So I would think that the density, if you took an equilibrium model, what that means is the density inside the filament would be almost constant.
I'm not sure where the core radius would be compared to.
The core radius should be large.
It should be,
Because you have such a small mass divided by the virial mass, that means that the core radius should actually, compared to the size of the filament, should actually be big.
Well, it's slightly bigger, yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I I mean, as you saw, there's a density, there's a 850 micron map cannot tell us the radius because we barely see, we only see the over densities. We have to go to another wavelengths to map this filament to be able to get a proper radius of the filament itself and compare it with that.
I think in your model, the filament will be more confined or by the field, depending on the morphology of the field.
Yeah, depending on how much field embeds that hoop stress that's providing that pressure.
So it's some combination of magnetic and thermal pressure, and it's not held together by gravity. So.
And that depends whether you are dominated by poloidal or toroidal components. I mean,
that's
Well, I think I will skip that. Here in the horse head, I mean, last week there was a question whether we have already mapped some filaments with embedded dense cores. So I would like to show you a map of the horse head that maybe you are not used to. I mean, the horse head is this very nice object, but when you look at it with a molecular tracer or dust, then it appears as a filament, yes? And indeed, what we saw with the bolometer map at 1.2 millimeter is that this filament is harboring a dense core, okay? And this one is self-gravitating. Star formation has started on the border of the horse head here, but not inside yet, okay? So, what we showed is that this filament is rotating. I mean, I have no conclusion about these works, but it's just to try to provide theoreticians and numericists with the velocity field and the density field of some filament. Okay, so here what I can tell is that this filament is again, you see that the mass per unit length is smaller than the virial mass per unit length, but you have a dense core. Okay, which is self-gravitating inside, and this filament is rotating.
Rotating in what sense?
Like this.
Like that, okay.
Yeah. Not like this, like that. And the velocity, indeed, the velocity of the rotation is increasing in the vicinity of the dense core. Okay, this is seen with the slope. Here you have position velocity cuts, and what you see is that when you approach the dense core, then the slope is increasing, and then it's decreasing.
Okay. And what is the velocity?
It's a projected velocity on the...
No, what is the value of the velocity?
Ah, the velocity gradient. Well,
no,
it's...
Not the velocity, not the velocity gradient.
Or
the thickness of that thing, I don't know what it is.
Sorry, what?
Or the thickness of that thing, so it can...
It's... the diameter is the 2 parsec.
Okay, so it's that times 0.2, the velocity.
Yeah.
It's a fraction of the velocity.
I mean, yes, it's a delta V about the structure, okay? I mean, you can see that here, it's a half a kilometer per second or so. I mean. So, well, I think... in the third case, we have studied... I just take a couple of minutes to show that. I mean, here is the torus in the 100 micron emission from IRAS, okay? And we have been studying this filament here, which is around the L1512 dense core. And we made this map in 12CO221 with the CSO telescope. I mean, I would like to emphasize that this kind of object cannot be studied with bolometers because it's too tenuous. You would not see it. And then the existing maps of bolometer also filter out a lot of stuff. So these studies have to be done with molecular tracers, and there are not so many. So we have to rely on CO and 13CO. So here is the dense core, the L1512, okay? And you can see here that it's connected to filaments, okay? Or filaments. And you can see here also some filaments here and here. So since we have here the velocity field, we wanted to check what are the velocity gradients along the filaments, okay? And here are some position velocity cuts. Okay, so this one has been done here, and this one here, and this one here. Okay. So, and you see that you have systematically some gradients of the order of a few kilometers per second per parsec, let's say 5. Okay. And of course, we cannot say whether these are converging flows or diverging. I mean, there is degeneracy here. But we have no signpost of outflows or star formation, so might be infalling material. And then, again, here's the distance between this and this. This distance is roughly equal to this distance. I mean, this this may be also a hint for some fragmentation.
That's a very high accretion rate. That's a very high Mach number coming along. That's, I don't know what your sound speed is in this gas, but...
Well, it's cold, the gas
that's
is...
That's a huge...
Well, wait, but it's 0.1. It's 0.1.
Yeah, but it, you have to multiply by the distance.
Okay. So if you compare it, if it is rotation, you know, the study that Alyssa Goodman did, she found that typically rotational energy compared to the gravitational energy was like a few percent. So are you finding numbers that are similar, or are you finding larger rotational energies?
I have to check that. I mean, to compute the gravitational energy is not. I have to check that.
Yeah, if you've computed the virial mass, you've computed the gravitational energy.
Yeah, yeah. And so we wanted to constrain the radial density profile, okay? So we've made cuts with 13 CO and higher transitions of the 12 CO. And the outcome of this is that. So here is the integrated intensity. And what we see here is that there is a sharp cutoff of the integrated intensity, which happens at the same position for all traces. So so we were wondering whether this is due to a genuine density profile or if there is any photodissociation effect behind this. So we tried to model this and with a PDR model, okay, by imposing a density profile, which was a power law, okay, and with various slopes of the density profile. So clearly, a uniform density cannot reproduce these observations. So photodissociation alone is not able to produce, to give you such a sharp cut of the column density. But then when you impose a density profile and compute the abundances of these species, okay, then here in colors you have various slopes. And what you see that there is a very big difference between a slope of 1 and then 2, 3, 4. I mean, there are some uncertainties on the comparison, mostly because of geometrical effects. But what we can exclude is that alpha equals 1 is not sharp enough to reproduce the sharp cutoff of the column density here. So, well, then this might be compared with theoretical models of filaments, like Ostreicher model for isothermal, or Stodolkiewicz model for magnetized filaments, or Figen-Pudlitz models. So the Ostreicher and Stodolkiewicz have alpha equal to 4, and as far as I remember, in the model of Figen-Pudlitz, the bulk of models is slightly larger than 1 and less than 2, maybe. Yeah, as far as I remember. I mean, this is an attempt to derive the density profile of these filaments, but you have to remember that it's very difficult because these are not visible with the bolometer. And there are some uncertainties because we have to rely on chemistry and photodissociation because we have to reproduce molecular abundances. But though, we can exclude shallow density profile.
Could you potentially go at it the other way and try and figure out the density profile by looking at the H alpha emission profile? You know, don't map the filamentary gas, map the hot gas, and look at the filament blocking it out. Would that give you finer sensitivity?
Well, yes, you can have much higher resolution, yes. But then I'm not sure that you are going to see the density profile of the filament. I mean, the material which is possibly fragmentating is the material you would see with continuum with the dust. So, that I'm not sure.
A little less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But sorry, you're comparing with the equilibrium model. So are those models consistent with the large velocity gradients that you are measuring?
Large velocity, along the filament, you mean?
Or whatever velocity fields you're measuring, there are velocities field that you measure.
The, for instance, the rotation of a
velocity
filament.
Dispersion statistics of centroids,
well, yes,
in the filament.
Yeah, yeah. These parameters are quite common indeed. The one I found here. And in the model of Figen-Pedutz, you can, I mean, they compare these models with this kind of parameters. So I'm not sure to understand your question because. Yeah. So here I try to put some filaments that you can see in the literature, and what you see is that almost all of these filaments have a linear mass mass per unit length which is only a fraction of the VIL mass per unit length, but though many of them has half star formation, okay, in them, and I tried to put here the orientation of the magnetic field when it's known. So parallel or perpendicular, well, I mean, you have all the cases indeed. So I don't think there is anything systematic about that, about the comparison of the orientation of the magnetic field. And, well.
So that's all stellar extinction. Polarization.
Yes. 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 Yeah.
You have the sub-millimeter data.
Well, in some cases, yes, it's mostly absorption by background stars, but in some cases, I think that, no, in all these cases, it's absorption by background stars. There is no, I didn't put emission by the dust.
Jason Figa has led an observation effort to do submillimeter mapping with Brenda Matthews and other people to, in submillimeter the emission, so that gives you a better fix on that. I don't know if you've looked at that data. It might be useful.
Yeah, definitely. So just some perspectives of this work. So as you saw, it's mostly work in progress. And so we try to constrain fragmentation models of filaments. And in the case of the Snake Nebula, what we have is that if the overdensities are due to a fragmentation of the filament, then the distance between them would indicate some magnetically dominated mode, with indeed the toroidal component being dominant over the poloidal component, which then might help for the confinement of the filament. And then the B68 and the two ones which were close to B68 are about to collapse. Well, B68 is about to collapse, and there are much denser than the stuff along the filament, which might indicate a temporal sequence. I mean, what we can think about is that you have the filament, and fragmentation started at the bottom, and B68 and the others are older than are more condensed than the stuff which is in the filament, because this part of the snake is just fragmentating right now. So role of magnetic fields, well, helical magnetic field, we see here that we need toroidal and poloidal component, with the toroidal being dominant. And for the case of L1512, you have a sharp density profile, and it's under-virialized, so okay. Here, again, you might need some toroidal magnetic field to confine the filament. And rotation of filaments, well, we see it in the case of the horsehead, L1512, and it has been seen in other filaments, so it might be a very common feature. I mean, this must be checked with more observations. So I stop here.
I think it, so it's interesting that you're getting that the filaments are generally under-virialized, because that suggests that the scale on which the collapse is starting isn't the filament as a whole. Really, the, you know, the only places they're collapsing are where non-gravitational non-gravitational effects, maybe, you know, magnetic, some sort of magnetic instability is generating over density, so that the, you know, so basically the characteristic scale of collapse are those individual cores, rather than the sort of the region as a whole.
Yeah, in, I mean, in that case, the distance between the cores is mostly fixed by the magnetic field mode of fragmentation.
I think it depends on when you're looking at it. So if there was a, if the filament was being created by a large scale flow, then it'd be unlikely that it would create a perfect filament. It would break up, possibly due to the turbulence which is inside it as well. And so then it would break up into bits. Then over time it would gradually accumulate more and more mass, then it might go unstable. Well,
but the magnetic field is stabilizing the filament with respect to pulsations like this.
Well,
it's highly non-stable in the, if you have pulsations along it. But if you take a filament and compress it like this with a filament, with the magnetic field, you get something which is stable.
Well, and it's clear that that filament's not being created by a large-scale flow anymore. I mean, because it's sitting in a sea of H alpha. There's no cold atomic gas flowing into it. You know, it's surrounded by hot ionized gas. There may have been one long ago.
Your observation of rotational filaments is really fascinating, especially when you're zooming on the core. I think this is really important because Jason and I never proposed how you would actually. Not really, how you would create this, how it would feel the graphs of film. And if you just have these shock simulations in HD, unless you follow it along, in any case, you just kind of get, you don't necessarily see helical fields. But David Tilley and I, in our paper just out, we did find that, you know, as you're condensing a core, it spins up, and that sends torsional waves up along these field lines. And there's an old paper by Habe et al. In Uchida's group. I actually was a member of that team that worked that out. But Habe was a student, and they actually proposed that it's these collapsing, you know, magnetized spinning cores that generate these torsion waves, which go out, they propagate out, and they focus material.
Okay.
They can help. So if you have started with filament, that wave running along would squeeze it, force it into this kind of situation. We did some calculations about the virial parameters in that PQ5 field, led by Habe.
Okay.
So I think that the origin of these helical fields and that length of rotation is very, very interesting in your data here.
So the idea is that collapsing regions generate sort of propagating fields of opposite helicity.
Yeah, and
that go up. Okay, so
right, exactly.
So you conserve natural helicity, but you generate positive and negative helicity and send them in opposite directions.
That's right, and then that starts bringing all these regions in this subcritical filament that suddenly gets squeezed. I've been looking for that in our simulations, and we found some evidence, one core is, I didn't follow it all the way, but you just see these torsion waves heading up.
But if the gravity is very subvirial, how do you manage to increase the density that much?
Well, we haven't checked how subvirial the filaments are, but the torsional wave that you can build up can be quite strong. And evidently, like your mean value is you're about a third subvirial, are you? And
yes, well, mean value, I didn't compute it, but...
it's like about a third, well...
Well, I mean, these filaments are very special here, okay? These are very special. If you look at these ones, yes, it's about a third or half.
You calculate the real mass as also for the condensed cores, not just for the filaments. I mean, going back to it.
Yeah, no, not yet. I mean, these are quite recent data from APEX.
So you started the talk about talking about how P68 is associated with the Snaith nebula. So if you have this filament idea, how exactly then does P68 fit into that picture?
Well, the picture I have in mind, originally, is that, let's get back to this photograph. I mean, the material here is missing because, might be missing because it has been accreted onto these cores. Okay? So, the common origin of all this thing is, for the time being, only visual, and supported by the fact that the velocities are quite close. I mean, they are not exactly the same, but then, I mean, if you have a helix and you cut it, I mean, I can imagine that you have some pieces which don't have exactly the same velocities.
But well, and you also, I mean, it is sitting in a sea of H alpha, so anything that's low density is going to get photoevaporated.
Yeah, indeed. Yes.
I mean, you know, if there were a lower density there, it could quite easily go away.
Yeah. So, but I would think that if this thing is evolving, you're forming these cores, it would be happening at basically the same time along this entire field. It's not like the ends are decaying away as you start to
tangle. Well, that I don't know.
You don't know.
No, I mean, for that we need models and theoretical
rules.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
Very well, the sequence.
How large is the apex map actually?
Like this. We have all that.
Can I make a plea for the theorists? We need movies, mm-hmm. twisting and turning filaments to aid our imagination. Because the geometry could get so difficult that...
The channel maps is not a good way to give you the velocity.
I'm talking to Ryan.
Okay.
I think he has to think as a movie.
You see the word of 10 to 6 years, Tom.
Right?
But he had this toroidal thing. I mean, then you would have this process happening at both ends of your film.
Possibly. Yeah, possibly, yes.
So where's the other end of the...
Yeah. I don't know that.
So the helix has the same sign throughout, or does it actually, can it actually possibly change in the middle? And we actually have already both times of zero sitting in the same structure again.
Sorry, I missed.
Is the sign of zero sitting the same throughout, or?
I have not computed the helicity. You mean the omega cross b, the scalar b?
Yeah, but the sense of the helix is the same throughout. So, yes, and as it was...
My simple helical model was just restrained to this region because I didn't try to include these things.
So you would somehow...
Yeah, I understand what you...
There's an extra complication here, which is that there are two different helices we're talking about now. There's the helix of the gas.
Yes, yes,
then
exactly.
There's the helix of the magnetic field wrapped around it. We can measure the helicity of the gas.
Aren't we overinterpreting these observations
lightly? Given that there's no magnetic field measurements.
Exactly. You're completely free.
Can I ask a question? Do you always see these filaments in your H-alpha?
That I didn't check.
No. Because the idea, how do you really know it's magnetic? Maybe it's just the fragmentation of the shock flare at the edge of the H
series. No, it's not. But I think
it. Remember that the H alpha eventually the H2 recombines, so it disappears after some
time. I think one reading
that. It does seem like you often see this with H alpha, and that might argue for a more dynamic explanation.
Yes.
I think what we need to do is something with polarization measurements of these regions.
But generally speaking, I see two issues that are related to what Nick is saying. Number one, I mean, there may be explanations that are more dynamical than an equilibrium model, and those are always more likely in astrophysics anyway. And number two, if you're really, after learning about star formation, you have to put this into the context of molecular clouds that are the size of star formation. And if this is a little fluke in the middle of a sea of H alpha, it's certainly not representative of most of star formation.
Well, yes, but B68 is a prototype of the star forming core.
It's a prototype because it's nearby.
It's the wrong prototype.
It doesn't make it normal.
Okay, so a normal one, what would be L1544?
Yes. Filaments that you find inside molecular clouds that are very dynamic and have probably little to do with equilibrium model of filaments.
But most of the star formation in the Milky Way is in the molecular rings.
Yes, okay.
Okay, if there are no more questions, let's thank you again.